You're listening to The Girl Dad Show.
Welcome to Season 3 of The Girl Dad Show, where we explore the intersection of parenthood and entrepreneurial spirit. Join me and some incredible guests as we share tips and tricks for finding work-life balance and making a positive impact not only on the world, but also our families. Let's create a fulfilling life together. It's The Girl Dad Show, Season 3. Neil, what's going on, brother? Thanks for joining me on the show.
Hey, Young. Thanks for having me, man.
No, man, I'm so excited to interview you. I feel like we're two colliding ships here, and all of a sudden we got like super intensely integrated over the last like couple of months.
Yeah, we really kind of jumped right in, huh?
Yeah. In a lot of ways, it was a match made in heaven, though, because I feel like there's a lot of synergy both in business but also in life, and I'm excited to explore that part of you. Yeah. So let's jump right in, man. Tell the listeners what you do for a living.
So kind of a loaded question. I like to say I'm a husband, father, entrepreneur, and investor in that order as often as possible. Reality, though, if you want a more specific answer, I run a single family office. I have a commercial real estate business, and I have a company here in Austin called Trash Caddies.
Yeah, that's a lot. Let's break it down a little bit. So what do you do in the family office?
So basically, I, alongside with my dad, we manage our family's capital. We're mostly passive investors. We do have some operating businesses, but we do a really wide swath of stuff, from private equity to commercial real estate to, like, we've invested in salt mines. We own part of a restaurant group in Dallas. Like, really, really, some of it's really strange, but it's, you know, highly diversified, mostly passive investments. So
yeah,
it just doesn't take up a ton of my time. But it's something I've really had a lot of fun with.
What's the weirdest thing? Salt mine seems really strange. You have something weirder than that?
Yeah. No, honestly, the salt mines are probably the weirdest thing.
So cool.
Yeah,
so
actually, cool. It was a really cool deal. We got involved and the company ended up being acquired in a relatively short timeline. It was actually a great return for us. I learned a lot about the salt industry. Like, I didn't realize that the bulk of salt, it's not produced for like table salt. It's more for like salting roads is kind of the number one use case. Yeah. So I learned a lot about
salt. You mean like when it's like icy and stuff?
Like, yeah. So like if you think of how much you use in a household, it's not very much. But when you think about salting all the roads in Canada, it's a ton of salt. So
literally,
I learned some stuff about salt. Probably the most out of character thing we did was we did invest in a restaurant group. And that has been super rewarding, very fun. We don't like restaurants. They have full potential to go to zero. They're very high risk. Mm-hmm. But the people who are running this particular group are just some of the best operators we've ever encountered. And we had invested individually in their restaurants because I was friends with one of the founders. And finally, we were like, hey, we would rather take a bigger piece of this than this kind of a la carte style. So we came in and made it so they never have to raise outside investment ever again. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And I love that you said that about the restaurant industry, because I think everyone, you know, that doesn't have a hard business, you know, like, you know, quote unquote hard business, you know, fantasizes about their business being a restaurant. When they go, I ever like quit my day job, you know, they always assume it. I'm like, you know, that's like the hardest one, right? Like, do you like hate money? Because that's like the worst one to start with. Go start a dry cleaner or like a laundromat first, you know? Why do you pick, everyone picks the restaurant first. I don't know why.
I think it's something people can identify with. They see the value, you know, they probably have really positive associations with food. Whether that was meals with family, meals with friends, going out. I just think there's so many positive associations that a lot of people want to get into giving that to their community.
Totally.
But now that I've seen what goes into making one successful, I will never open a restaurant. Like, exactly. I now know all the things that I don't know.
Yeah, it is such a challenging business. And the chances of it succeeding are so small. And then it's always so fragile unless you have really strong systems and operators, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those businesses. But it is, you're absolutely right. It's a sense of community. I mean, I say this all tongue in cheek because my life goal at the end when I've retired, and you'll know when I'm ready to retire, is I'm going to own a restaurant. And that's kind of my last business, because I love that sense of community and camaraderie around a meal.
Yeah.
I love it. But
that's what everyone's into. It's just such a positive. Everyone loves having dinner with friends, you know?
That's right. It's that sense of community around food, you know? But all right, let's move to the next one. So what about this commercial real estate? What's going on there?
Honestly, not much. With current interest rates, interest rate environment, we are largely sitting on the sidelines. I started it with my best friend from college. He was the best man at my wedding. We really wanted to get into the apartment game. And, you know, for like the last 10 years or so, everyone's kind of a genius in a bull market. Everyone was getting into multifamily syndications and we were investing in them, and we saw how much the GPs were making, and we were like, I feel like we could do this. and then we'd get both sides of the equation. And so, yeah, we bought 3 apartment complexes in South Dakota, and we are co-GPs on 196-unit syndication in Mesa, Arizona.
Nice. That's amazing. Yeah. I love the comment about everyone's a genius in a bull market. That is, like, so funny to me.
We thought it was just going to be awesome, and then the Fed was like, we're going to raise interest rates in a way that has never happened in your lifetime. And suddenly we were like, wow, there's a lot of people who are going to get burned. You know, everyone and their brother got into it. They bought these things at super low cap rates. And a lot of these loans are 3, 5, 7 year loans. You know, if you had a 3-year loan you got in mid 2020, you're going to have to refinance that thing this year. Mm-hmm. And I suspect there's going to be a lot of people who very much regret getting into it. Like, thankfully, we were fairly lowly levered and bought really unsexy stuff. So, you know, for us, it was more of a buy and hold. We got long-term loans, so we're fine. But I do think it's going to be a rough next 12 months.
I agree. And I think the real estate market especially is going to be very interesting with the interest rates. I mean, even small business. I mean, small business loans are getting crazy atrocious now too. So
yeah,
I think everyone's going to get a little compressed over the next 12 months. But that's really fun story though. So kind of right now you're holding tight on your long-term investment. Luckily you made that decision, but it sounds like it's mostly just not on like standstill, but just kind of on pause for a little bit while the market kind of corrects itself. Cool. And then obviously this is what I know you for, so I definitely want the listeners to know you for. Tell me about Trash Caddies, because it's such a fun business. I love this business to death. It's so amazing.
Thank you. I do too. So basically we're a premium subscription trash valet service. We go by your house and take your trash bins to the curb, and then we come back the next afternoon after they've been emptied and we bring them back to where they belong. And most people have a absolutely visceral reaction to that along the lines of, people are lazy enough to pay for this. And so like 90% of people hate us right out of the gates. Thankfully, probably half of those people come around when they hear about our use cases. So our primary customer base is short-term rental owners. And, you know, if you have 5 Airbnbs in town, you're making 10 trips every single week, 5 to take the cans out, 5 to bring the cans in. And, you know, for you, it's probably a headache. They're probably distributed across a relatively significant geography. You know, the odds that you have 5 Airbnbs all in a row aren't very good. They may be on different trash days. Essentially, just walking the bins to the curb, a 2-minute task, owns your life. And so we just take that off your plate. Yeah, we do it for really cheap. It's $9.99 a week. And, you know, if we were doing it for one house, it wouldn't make money. But because we have reached saturation in the markets we're in, we're able to do it profitably. And yeah, I mean, that it started as like a little side hustle thing. And now it is kind of it's my baby. It's my passion project.
I love that. I mean, that's literally so... So amazing. It's such a great story, because and I have a lot of love for it and a lot of empathy and inspiration from it, because my crown jewel is my pool cleaning company. And yeah. Everyone does a double take when I tell them, like, wait, what? And I'm like, yeah, we clean pools. And I'm like, we're like robots and software. And I'm like, no, we just clean pools.
Yeah, we just clean your pool. Yeah.
It's like my baby. It's my crown jewel. It's like my favorite business. It's so good, you know? And yeah. It's just like so hard to explain to people how fun it is, you know, and how amazing it is. But I love this business. I think it's great. And I love the way that you're tackling it with like, kind of like a different mindset around like, you know, saturation of market and scale, because yeah, unit economics wise, people would probably scratch their head, but you know, it takes kind of a builder and an entrepreneur to look at it from a macro.
Yeah. I've always been obsessed with recurring revenue.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to find a problem that we could tackle that would be recurring revenue. And yeah. It's one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. Like it's fun. Almost every other industry I've worked in, you have very, very limited wins. So like I worked in contingency recruiting, you know, you make a placement, you get paid. The other 29 days out of the month or 30 days out of the month, you're just working. And yeah. Apartments, like you have one good day in apartments. The other 29, if you get a phone call, it's not someone saying they're calling to pay you extra rent. Something has gone wrong. And so, you know, with this, we have money coming in every day and it's super fun to watch and see what levers we can pull and, you know, different ways to get the word out and make people aware that we exist. And we've encountered some people who really seem to find value in it, which is something yeah. we wanted. You know, we wanted to provide a service that people were thankful to have.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I love it. And let's switch gears a little bit, because I know I'm working up your chain of your description of yourself, but I'm getting to the front of it now. Talk to me about your kid and when you had kids in this journey of your life and what does that look like?
Yeah, so I'm married to a wonderful lady named Julie, and she and I had, our son Emmett. He'll be 2 years old December 2nd. And then we have a little girl named Cora who's 7 months old.
Oh my gosh, you're in the thick of it. You're
big time.
We're in the thick of it.
Yeah, 15 months apart. We have, I believe it's Irish twins.
That's amazing. Wait, 15 months apart. Yeah, that is really close together. And you're dealing with some youngsters. So you're doing the full, like, no sleep in the middle of the night, all that stuff? Or
honestly, our kids are great sleepers.
I hate you. I hate you so much right now.
I feel like we got really lucky. I always feel bad because I'm like, hey, honestly, parenting is not that bad. And then my friends are like, my four-year-old got up at 2 in the morning last night. I'm like, okay, maybe I have a biased opinion here. But no, my kids are great sleepers and... You know, Cora started sleeping through the night at probably like 3 or 4 months old. So we feel very fortunate.
That's amazing. We were both good, both even keel.
Both were great. Honestly, we kind of hit the jackpot. We're spoiled.
Totally did. You know, there's usually a sleeper chill, like a sleeper agent, right? One of them's really good, so it deceives you into thinking it's going to be easy, and then the second's horrible, you know, which is what happened to our family. We're like, oh, this is nothing. I don't know what everyone's complaining about. We had our second kid, and it was just like horrific, you know, and that's much more common, but that's great.
I told my wife, I was like, I'm very worried that our second kid is just going to be a terrorist. Because our son is like such a happy, chill kid.
Yeah.
And I was like, I feel like this is how they trick you into having a second kid.
Totally.
And now that we have a second kid, Cora is like, Emmett was a very happy baby, but Cora blows the doors off him in terms of just, she's smiling always.
Oh my gosh. Like,
yeah, we just totally lucked out. She's fantastic. So.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Congratulations. I mean, I joke and I'm teasing you. I'm super happy for you. I think that's really good.
No, I was really intimidated by the idea of having two kids, and like we didn't necessarily plan to have two kids in such rapid succession. And so when we found out we were pregnant for the second time, I think we were kind of like, what have we done? And honestly, I wouldn't do it any other way now. Like, I'm so happy we did it this way. They're close in age. Emmett is obsessed with his little sister. She's obsessed with watching him. You know, she can't like move much yet, so she just kind of like watches him around the room. But it really has been, I tell people, if having one kid is a 10 out of 10 hard, having two kids is just an 11 out of 10. It really isn't like twice as hard. It's just incrementally there are a little bit more logistical challenges, but it has been a relatively easy transition for us.
Yeah, that's great. I also think that it's all super smart that you lumped it. That's what we did too. I mean, there was a strategy of like having one, taking a break, and having another. And we did ours like back to back as well, because we opted for like the stage, you know, like having the what made me convinced about this decision was that when someone told me about the diaper bag, having to like save all that equipment and then bring it back 4 years, 6 years later, and I'm like, I don't want to do that. Yeah. And I just want it all at the same stage and just be done with the whole diaper stage together and then just give it away and be done with it, you know?
Now, we feel the same way. Like, now when you're done with diapers, you're done with diapers.
That's right.
You know?
And you kind of move on. Yeah.
We've accelerated the timeline for when I don't ever have to change another diaper until my kids have kids.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Awesome, man. Well, let me talk to you about your change in perspective. What's changed since you've had kids, like since becoming a dad? Obviously your role, you've now put father in front. Or you say husband first, or you say father first?
I do. I very, very strongly believe husband first.
Yeah, talk to you about that.
I just think that like taking care of your marriage is the most important thing, like even for your kids, you know, making sure that you're preserving that team is what is best for your kids, in my opinion. And so I make sure that, like, if I made time for my kids but not for my wife, and we didn't have that quality time, our relationship would erode, and our kids would see the impact of that. So I see it as my responsibility to put my wife first, and then my kids naturally follow, and then the rest of the stuff is, you know, obviously not, it's critical to our family survival to an extent, but it's not my number one priority is definitely my family.
It's awesome. And like, talk me through like some of the things that you do to encourage that. Are you talking like simple things, like, you know, like tactical things like date night, like protecting date nights, or is that like not what you mean? Or are you talking more like, you know, like actually like going to do more complex stuff, like organizing like workshops together, or like things like that? Like, what are you doing?
I think it's like a combination of little things, making sure that my wife has my undivided attention. I'm someone who has a really hard time shutting off from work. So
no kidding.
I recently, it's really like, it was just ingrained in me by my parents. And I got to a point where, you know, my son, we got him a fake cell phone, and he would take it and walk around and like wave his hands and like pretend to talk on it. And it has to be from you, because like I don't talk on the phone in front of him. And I was like, dang, man, my kid's impression of me is already that like I'm on the phone a lot. And so I actually went out and bought one of those time safes. And when I get home from work, I throw my phone in the safe. I set it for at least an hour, and it locks, and there's nothing I can do to get my phone out for at least an hour.
Oh, wow.
And everyone who works with me or for me knows that for that hour, if something goes wrong, you're just going to have to figure it out, because I am off the grid.
Wait, is that on Amazon? Where'd you get that?
I got on Amazon. It's super cheap. It's probably like $40. It's great. Highly recommend it.
Like, yeah, my wife might buy it for me for my birthday after she hears this episode.
You know,
that's great.
It really is, like, even just, I've only been doing it for probably a month, but like even just coming home and playing with my kid and not doing this move, I can tell a difference between, like, he can tell that I'm fully engaged.
Oh, wow.
And I just think, you know, he's not even two, but like he'll talk to me. And when he's talking to me, I want him to know I'm looking at him, not down on my phone.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, going back to preserving my relationship with my wife, we do make a point of having date nights. I think where it's really easy to let things go by the wayside is, you know, oh, we have to take the kids to this event. Now we got to get them home. Now we got to get them fed. I think it's okay to, like in our case, we have a nanny we work with who helps us out. And I think it's okay to be selfish. I think it's important to be selfish at times, where you have to say, look, I gave my kids 8 hours today. I need to take an hour to go have happy hour with my wife. You know, it's probably harder for her as a stay-at-home mom to remove herself from that situation for a little bit and not have them in the back of her mind. But I do think it's really important to still make making time for each other a priority so that you're not just getting that tired, you know, conversation in bed at the end of the day, every single day, where you're getting the most depleted version of your partner. And, you know, we're busy. We have a lot going on. So at the end of the day, like, we like to sit around and watch TV, but you're not having, like, invigorating conversations about your future or, you know, what exciting thing happened at work that day or what you want to work on in the future. And I think it just creates more opportunities to have those conversations and, you know, continue to make sure that we're on the same page and working toward the same things.
Yeah, that's really great, man. I love it. And that sounds like something that was a big change once you had kids, because you probably were already focusing on her to begin with.
Yeah.
And then so you had to make that intentional decision, and you kind of went through that philosophy of realizing that that was the core and important.
Yeah.
That's very cool, much man.
So. Like, having kids changes things a lot, you know?
It does.
Whereas we went out every Friday, that, like, we didn't really want to anymore, you know? Because you're like, man, I know I'm going to be up early Saturday no matter
That's
what.
Right.
I don't want to go out till midnight any longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think your priorities just shift, and you have to shift them together.
Yeah, and then how much of that has guided you from your upbringing? What was that like?
So my mom worked for Intel for many years, but retired when I was born and became a stay-at-home mom. And so my mom was super present. My dad has a pretty unique background. He went to the Air Force Academy where he played football, hit a guy with his head up with two games left in his senior season and crushed three vertebrae in his back.
Oh.
And so 2 weeks before graduating, he was medically discharged from military service. So he still got to graduate, but they were like, hey, good luck. So, you know, he's 2 weeks from graduating. He doesn't have a job.
Wow.
And he's about to marry my mom. And so he ended up getting into HVAC, like industrial heating, ventilation, and cooling. And my dad, he worked a lot when I was a kid, like 100-hour weeks. You know, he bought a business the year I was born. And had to work exceptionally hard. It had, I think, 7 employees when he bought it, and he grew it to a couple thousand. And so, but I mean, he worked a ton.
Wait, a couple thousand employees?
Yeah, yeah, it got very
big. Oh my gosh, that's a big HVAC business. Holy cow.
Yeah. And we expanded into like a lot of different stuff. So they did clean rooms and building automation stuff and like nurse paging systems for hospitals and all kinds of stuff. But, you know, he worked a lot. I think my dad was someone who had an immense sense of, I hate to use the word obligation because I feel like it has almost a negative connotation, but I feel like he felt very obligated to care for the people around him, and he felt a lot of responsibility for them. And that included us, but also, you know, the hundreds and at some point thousands of people who, you know, depended on him for their paycheck. And so he worked a lot, but it's not like a negative to me. Like, it definitely instilled in me understanding of what it takes to achieve certain things.
Yeah. And so how are you doing that? How are you going to teach your kids that, or do you not want to teach your kids that?
So it's interesting, because like, I feel like it's very easy to look back and identify the things your parents did quote unquote wrong.
Totally.
You know, I think everyone kind of wants to course correct from the things that they think their parents didn't do right.
Yeah.
Not realizing, or maybe even realizing, that like, you're just the next generation who's just going to have a new set of things that you screw up.
That's right.
And that's just part of being a parent. And so I think for me, being more present is something I want, even if it comes at the expense of not having the same level of success that my dad has had. But I think that's also, like, my dad likes to say that for us to end up where we ended up, we all had to sacrifice. And what he means by that is he's the one who was working the 100-hour weeks, but it also meant, you know, him traveling and not being around, and like my mom having to handle me on her own. And she's definitely like the unsung hero who, you know, kind of put the family on her back. And so I think for me, I just want to be I want my kid to know that I was there as much as possible.
Mm. Yeah, your success criteria is like an evolution of your dad in a lot of ways. You're like diversifying it. It's not like you're saying it's a bad or negative thing. You're just saying, hey, that was the decisions that he made, and I'm just looking to change. It's like a video game profile. It's like he was like super optimized for, you know, traction. Yeah. and you know, and acceleration, and you're optimizing for, you know, overall speed and something else, right? Like you're just kind of like changing the dials a little bit, and that's pretty cool, man. I like that mentality a lot. That's a really interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm very thankful, because like I couldn't do any of this if my dad hadn't laid the foundation. You know, like my day job is running a family office. We wouldn't have a family office if my dad hadn't put in that work. And so, yeah. You know, did it come with sacrifices? Yes. But like now I can be there for my kid more because my dad sacrificed his time at times with me.
Yeah.
And now I get to be there more. And my dad is now super involved in my kid's life. And so it's kind of come full circle and been really fun to watch.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome. It's a very utilitarian way of looking at it. I like it. I like I like your dad a lot, actually. It sounds really cool.
I do
sounds
too.
Like a cool dude. Yeah. And then how does your wife feel about this philosophy?
I think she feels good about it. You know, I mean, she's always been my number one fan and like has really encouraged me.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's hard at times, and I think there was a stretch where I was not, you know, I was just working for the family office, which didn't take more than a few hours of my time every week, and it was COVID, and I was home all the time, and we got to spend a ton of time together, and, you know, with two kids and three operating businesses, like, it's different now, but
yeah.
She's a great sport about it, and, you know, she has her own stuff going on too, and, you know, she is a nurse, but right when she was deciding whether she was going to go back to the hospital setting, we found out we were pregnant again. So she is still kind of on hiatus, and I'm, you know, at some point I think she'll want to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm super pumped for her when that comes up. But, mm-hmm. you know, for now she's been super supportive of helping us get this thing off the ground and listening to me talk about trash for a year.
So you talked to her about the business.
Oh yeah. I trust my wife's opinion, and a lot of times I'll turn to her for more emotional stuff where, you know, I'm like, am I being unreasonable, or like, you know, is there a way I could better approach this? Or like, how would you deal with this person?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think she knows my shortcomings.
Mm.
And she, I think, is probably one of the best at coaching me around how to get out of my own way.
Mm.
So I think if you asked her, she'd say I don't always listen. I could definitely be bullheaded, but I definitely take what she says to heart.
Oh, that's awesome, man. I love it.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, even if you don't listen, it's still listening. I mean, the reality is like, you know, like it's something, I guess I'm kind of talking to my wife right now, so bear with me. Like through proxy, I'm talking to my wife, so when she listens to this. But yeah, I mean, I care enough to ask, but it doesn't always mean that I'm going to do what you tell me, right? It's just like,
yeah.
I care, you know what I mean? I want to take all the important people that I care about, and I want to get all the information, and I'm going to digest it and synthesize it, but it doesn't
mean...
Are
you someone who like wants to talk things through, not even necessarily to get feedback, but like, do you just like to talk through problems out loud?
Yes and no. So I don't need to like talk it out loud per se, but I like to hear people tell me their opinions from wide varieties of perspectives.
Yeah.
So if there's a point where I'll say, hey, like you'll see this, because, you know, we'll be friends, you know, and you know, long from forever for now. And you'll see a moment where I'll message you and I'll be like, hey, here's the problem I'm having. Da, da, da. What do you think I should do? And I'll just ask you. And then you won't hear from me for like a couple of days. That's just me getting your perspective, you know, because you have a very specific type of point of view. And then I'll go ask somebody else. And then I like to marinate in like everybody's thoughts. And then I like to digest and then process and then come up with what I want to do based on kind of what I digested. It's like, it's more internalizing, but I do like to express it and then hear people's reactions, you know, and then digest. And then I'm a processor. Does that make sense?
I like to talk about stuff.
You do? You like talking all out? Yeah.
I do. I don't know. Like I have a couple people I'll turn to, and I think the people whose opinions I value the most are the ones who would tell me point blank if they think I'm wrong.
Yeah.
you know, and but it's always nice to just, like, even that I'll be like, I'm not wrong. But, you know, at the same time, I appreciate that they're willing to tell me if they think I'm going down the wrong path or something.
Totally. You're looking for that. You're looking for that, the same thing that I'm looking for, which is like the different perspectives. But it sounds like you're more intentionally looking for people to argue against you, which is,
I do like great. To argue a lot. Yeah, admittedly, I will take whatever side you don't want to take. Like, and my family will vouch for me on this. Like, family dinners. So I'm like, you want to talk politics? I'll take whatever side you don't want.
That's like, amazing.
I just like to. I
for
like
the
to,
art of the debate.
Just oh, 100%.
I love it. And did you do debate in high school and college?
I did.
You did?
I did,
oh,
I did it in high school. I didn't do it in college, but I did football for about 3 weeks and came home and said, Dad, would you care if I don't play football? And he was like, absolutely not. And I was like, cool, I quit football. And, you know, I think it was super fun while I did it, but I was 5'5", 120 pounds. I was going to get destroyed. Yeah. Like I was, and our, my school's team was very good. I was never going to play.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I switched to a much tougher sport and did speech and debate.
This episode of The Girl Dad Show is brought to you by Owners Club. As a business owner myself, I know firsthand how challenging the journey can be. Whether it's having someone that I can ask a very tactical question to, or just being able to share my big successes without guilt. Building a business is a lonely journey, and it does not have to be. After building and coaching dozens of businesses to success, there is one insight that is so obvious and simple, yet hard to execute. And that is, network equals net worth. And so if you're a growth-minded, supportive, smart, and hardworking business owner looking for a community of like-minded entrepreneurs to build with, look no further than the Owners Club. You will make lifelong friends and build your business that works for you. You can learn more online at owners.club.
Debate's a good one, man. I mean, I don't know anybody that doesn't excel in nowadays life that's done debate. I mean, I think it teaches you all the core skills that we've kind of forgotten over the last like 15 years through technology and stuff. And you're really seeing like the rebirth of, you know, these people with soft skills and, you know, language skills and because it's not like selling per se, but it's like the ability to negotiate, charm, disarm people like with words is just a lost skill. It's like completely gone. I don't even know what happened to it. It's just like people are so awkward now when you like hang out with them and no one has that skill of like gab anymore, you know? Do you know if I mean noticed
that? We should have done this in person, Young. We live in the same place. Here we are. We're literally video conferencing talking about how all the in-person stuff is dying and you live 20 minutes away.
I know, it's terrible. It's terrible. Yes, but I do think that there is something to be said about that. So that's a really good point. Super meta. I should definitely do these things in person when we're in person. And I gotta have you over anyways. I can't wait to meet your kids and your wife. She sounds awesome, and your kids sound awesome. So I'm glad that you guys are all aligned on this epiphany and strategy. It sounds like you have a really good thought on this. So have you put a lot of thought into this? Because it sounds like this is like very philosophical and well thought out.
As far as like our family dynamic or business or all of
both
the above,
of like how you're positioning your business with your family, how you prioritized it, how you're talking to your wife over your kids.
Yeah.
How you're like synthesizing all of it. Sounds like you've done a lot of deep work on this because you're kind of like very intentional.
My wife will vouch. My wife will vouch. I'm very into, you know, I'll be like, where are we going? Like, what's the point? Like, what are we trying to accomplish? Because I think it's so easy in today's society to, like, get on the wheel and just be on the wheel. And you don't even know where you're running. You're just kind of running in place. And, you know, like, what is our goal? Like, what do we want in life? And how do we know when we can take our foot off the throttle, you know, or the gas pedal, you know? At what point will we be satisfied? What do we want to accomplish? And I do think it's important to have those goalposts in mind because, you know, I think my dad is someone who just kind of, he still works. I don't think he could ever shut it off. He just doesn't have it in him. It's in his DNA. And like, I don't necessarily want that, you know, I say that and then the second I'm bored, I start a new company. But I do think that like, I want to be aware of where I'm headed and make sure that, I can get hit by a bus tomorrow. Like, what's the goal here? If this was my last day on Earth, am I happy with how I spent it? And, you know, if it's working towards something, so, you know, okay, I'm going to put in 3 to 5 years of trash caddies and we're going to sell it. And here's what we're going to do with the proceeds. Like, that's the thing that's going to get me out of bed every day, not moving someone's trash bin to the curb. It's the 3 to 5 year, where is it taking us, that is what gets me up.
Yeah, that's interesting. And this, so do you have these conversations on a regular basis, or do you do this by yourself?
I feel like I'm one of those people who's like always in my head. Yeah. I'm always thinking about, like, I'll be in bed at like midnight and be like, we should do this thing with the stickers for our trash bin business. And like, you know, I just can't shut it off. But
yeah,
like my wife will vouch that I will be laying in bed, you know, after a long day. I'll be like, so like, what do you want to, like, where do you want to be in 5 years? And she'll just be like, she'll be like, asleep, go to bed. But no, she really is. She's a good sport about it. And I think, you know, I just want us to have like rewarding lives that we're proud of. And I think that it's easy to get lost in the day-to-day stuff and lose sight of why you're doing it in the first place. Like, you know, I want to be home and spend time with my kids, but one of the ways to get to do that is to establish financial independence in a way where we can do that more frequently, or, you know, have opportunities to take your kids places.
Yeah. The big conundrum that I've been facing right now is like, do you just like, you know, take a shorter breath of depth, right? And go 2 or 3 years hard to build that financial freedom so that you have more time to be financially free with your kids. And so, or do you try to do it in a more balanced approach where you're building it while you spend a little more time, you know, in diversified manners. And that's been the big conundrum for me. Mostly because my logical brain says, no, it's better to spend 2 or 3 years and build it all out and then spend, you know, 20, 30 years enjoying the fruits of your labor. And that's kind of my thought process. But more recently, sorry. Okay. Okay.
How do we open the top window there?
Okay, there's a key. Ask mom, the key's hanging over there, okay? Okay, thank you. Sorry about that.
No, that's awesome, man. It wouldn't be the girl that's show. That's parenting in a nutshell, right?
That's right. That's right. So the conundrum that I'm facing, though, more recently is my wife basically called me on my bull, because she basically said, like, it's totally ridiculous for you to say that that's what you're trying to do, because it sounds really virtuous and sounds awesome and logical, but you know it's going to happen 2 months into your semi-retirement. You're going to get bored. And you're going to start another business, and there's going to be a whole nother reason why we need to make X more money. And and the reality is, like, you'll always do that. And then it made me really think over the last couple of months, like, I've been really like having some deep thoughts around this, around like, maybe I'm like your dad. Maybe I just can't like stop, dude. You know what I mean?
What if that is what it is? I worry that I'm the same way. And if you figure out the answer, please let me know. I do think it's a really tough question, because like, I think for me, one of the things I find rewarding about life is tackling new problems and learning about new things. And, you know, there's only so many vacations you can take before, you know, you miss having a challenge. And so I don't know what the balance is there. And
yeah, exactly.
I think it's a regular struggle for a lot of dads.
Let me switch the question a little bit. What do you want your kids to think about this problem? What do you want for them?
So it's interesting, because like, I feel like I really appreciate the work ethic my parents instilled in me and the sacrifices that I saw them make.
Right.
You know, they've been married for 40 plus years. And awesome. I think like 43. Don't hold me to that.
Nice.
And, you know, I saw how much work they put into their marriage, and I saw the sacrifices they made so that I could go to whatever school I wanted, and that kind of stuff. And I want my kids to see that these things don't just fall from the sky, and that it takes hard work and dedication to something to turn it into a prosperous venture. At the same time, I want my kids to see me. And so I'm very much in the same situation you are, where I'm trying to find the right way to navigate how do I make time for my kids without creating a false narrative that you can just like do what you want when you want and everything will be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's that's really not helpful for me, Neil. I needed you to answer the question. I'm teasing.
Sorry, man. I don't have it figured out.
No, it's okay. I was like, oh man, this guy's super philosophical. He might have the answer to this. I love it though. We're on the same journey though, so we'll help each other figure this out, because that is the big question, right? Like for me too, it's like I think I'm very happy with the way that my parents raised me overall, right? And I've come to learn to love the sacrifices they've made. And to your point, you know, I've obviously tried to be, you know, the opposite of what they did when I first had my kids. And I realized that it's actually really detrimental to a lot of ways. And I'll tell you the exact moment. It happened like literally half a year ago. Lily came up to me and she was just like, my oldest, she turned 6, you know, and she came up to me and she's like, Dad, are we rich? And I'm like, wait, what? Why are you asking me this question? And I'm like freaking out. Like in my mind, I'm just like cycling through all the reasons why she would ask me this. And, you know, it came to the conclusion that like, you know, I'm at every single thing. Like I'm at every single soccer game. I go to every single parent-teacher conference. I go to like, I mean, I'm at every single, I'm like over-optimizing for time availability. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And like, and yet she has... She doesn't want anything. She gets everything she wants, you know, like we have a good life, you know? So it's like, I could see like how I'm like creating a monster, essentially a world-class bee, you know? And so I'm like, oh crap. I need to do the exact opposite of what I thought was a good parent. Do you know what I mean? Because the reality is now she doesn't have any like context. She has no context on how hard it is to create this life. And after she goes, she doesn't see me going to work after she goes to sleep. She doesn't see me like, okay, great, you went to bed. Now I go back to work from 8 p.m. to 1 a.m., you know, cranking out, sleep for 5 hours and start all over again so I can get a couple hours of work before she... She doesn't see that. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. She just sees me available all the time and like buying her chocolates and toys and stuff. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm doing a huge disservice. And it's been really wild, right, over the last 7 or 8 months, ever since that conversation with Lily, and just trying to like... show her sacrifice, show her the work, and show her how hard it is to achieve stuff, you know?
Do you have any kind of like, do you do like an allowance or chores or anything to kind of teach her about?
Yeah, we started that. We started that like last year, and we did this whole thing where I don't want to reward them for chores per se. So I called them special. So you would do your daily chores. And then if you did all your daily chores, like clean up your room, like there's like a list of things that you did, then you would earn the right to do a special. And then the special was something creative. Like I would like draw a scribble on a piece of paper, and you'd have to like turn it into some sort of animal or create something from that scribble. Or I would tell you 2 or 3 bullet points, and you'd have to create like a 4 or 5 minute story around these nouns and verbs, right? Like create like a magical story around it. So it's just trying to make sure that I'm not paying them for tasks, because like I've heard that if you reward that, then you accidentally, I don't know, man. I'm doing this podcast thing. I talked to too many smart parents, and so I got all this like cool stuff in my brain right now. I'm like, but anyways, I'm trying to like reward them for something that's more critical thinking, you know, critical thinking, right? Yeah. And so it's going really well. I'm like, oh my God, I'm an awesome parent. I'm like, I'm the best. This is so cool, right? And then like my daughter like brags to my mom, you know, like, oh, grandma, I have like, you know, I saved up $80. I'm like super rich. I'm going to go buy stuff and da da da. And she's like, oh, that's so sweet. You got $80. Next time you come, I'll give you a couple $100. And she's just like, wait, what? And I'm like, Mom, what are you doing? And sure enough, we visit. My mom has like a couple $100 on a balloon ready for her. She's like, there you go. Just let me know when you need more money. So she's like, now she's like, I did like 4 months of work to make $80. And I just have to call grandma once, and she'll just give me food. It like completely ruined the context of money, you know? It's just like, I've never recovered from that. But it was going good. It was going good until that happened. So just don't let your grandparents talk to your kids is really what the lesson.
Oh, dude, I I'm hosed. My mom and dad, like, my mom spoiler. In particular, she, like, loves them, will spoil them.
Yeah.
And there is nothing I can do to stop that. I don't even bother. I've just accepted it, and I'm just going to roll with the punches.
That's right. That's right. Oh, man, that's awesome. Well, I'm glad that we got a chance to talk about all this stuff, but I do want to ask you a couple of rapid-fire questions before we close out here, because I like to ask everybody the same questions to create some symmetry to the interviews. So here we go. What advice do you have for other parents and soon-to-be parents?
Twofold. If you're just about to be a parent, nothing is as big of a deal as you're going to make it the first time. Like, we have a second kid now, and it's crazy how much, you know, the first time you're like, no screens in the house, like, we have to breastfeed, and like, second kid, you're like, I'll put her to bed after she finishes her formula, and we finish watching Dateline. It like, just cut yourself some slack. It really, everything feels big. Your kid's going to be fine if you love them.
Yeah. Like,
if you put the time in to, you know, redo them and be around them and get excited with them, that goes way farther than whether you breastfed or bottle fed or whether you sleep train or didn't sleep train. Like, just love on your kids. And the second thing is, if you're an entrepreneur, make time to be a lazy parent. And what I mean by that is, entrepreneurs, I think we have a tendency to want things done like this. Mm-hmm. And the best thing you can do for your kid is, don't wait. Like, if you're going to take the trash out and throw it in your trash bin outside, of course I'd use a trash reference. You know, if you wait until right before you have to leave and your kid's like, can I help? You're going to be like, we got to go. Like, come on, let's get out of here. And you're going to take it. If you carve out 20 minutes to take the trash out and let your kid drag that thing slowly and spill some of it and make a mess, and they're going to learn so much more because you're fighting your natural instincts to be precise and fast. And just, like, make time to be a little lazy, in the sense where, like, make time to let your kid make a mess and figure things out and learn. And it's not, I think, our natural inclination just as individuals, but I have to remind myself, me helping my son do something achieves much less than me sitting there watching him struggle to do something for 10 minutes. Like, he gets way more out of struggling and me just kind of hanging out with him and being supportive.
Dude, that's deep. That's really deep. And that cuts deep, because you're totally hitting me. Like, you're talking to me specifically. I'm terrible at that. Yeah, that's really important, actually. Because my mind is immediately trying to optimize for efficiency.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely accurate. You're absolutely accurate. Yeah, that's good.
Thank
man.
You.
Okay, what's something that's super surprising that you learned about yourself after becoming a parent that you didn't expect?
Honestly, I'm a much more patient person than I thought.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I think there are people in life who want kids.
Yeah.
I think it's a fairly important distinction for me. I wanted a family. If I hadn't met my wife, I would not have gone and adopted a child on my own. Like, I wanted kids to an extent, but I really wanted a family above all else. And I was very nervous that I'm a relatively bullheaded, opinionated person. And I was worried that I was going to be kind of easily frustrated with kids. And I don't super love spending a lot of time with, like, I've adapted now, but 4 years ago, if you dropped me in a room full of 2-year-olds, I would have been like, this is my nightmare. And now, like, it's just so different. I'm way more patient, and it's definitely made me a better person. Like, that patience has carried over into other avenues of my life, where it just kind of makes you relax a little bit and realize that it's worth it to spend a little extra time and, you know, not get frustrated.
Yeah, that's great, man. I love that.
I was surprised. Awesome. I was very worried. I was.
I'm actually surprised hearing you say it. It's actually really surprising. That's great, man. Let's switch gears for a little bit. Your favorite book? Do you have a favorite business book or book?
I do. I think that I read a lot of business books, and I really kind of tend to dislike them because I feel like they take 1,000 words to say what they could say in 100 words.
Yeah.
But Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People, I just like, it's so simple and it's withstood the test of time. It's still relevant. And it's the littlest things where you're like, oh, I think I knew that. But they're really simple tactics that I think make it easier to interact with people and to carry yourself in a way that's conducive to what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. And then to bring us home, when you're not, trying your best to be a great husband and father, investor, trash valet, business builder, what does Neil do for fun? What are your downtime activities?
I like to run. So I run every morning with my son. We'll do like 3 to 5 Whoa. Miles every morning, unless I'm just totally worn out. And I have like a running stroller. He's not running, obviously.
That's amazing.
And then I like to fly fish
a lot.
I'm big, but really any kind of fishing. Like if you ever want to go fishing, I'm down. My wife and I like to go out and go to restaurants. Honestly, we're big food people. I'll shy away from the term foodies, but we do like trying new places and eating weird things. And, you know, so yeah, I feel like I don't have like a ton of hobbies, but the ones I like a lot.
Yeah, those are great, man. Those are at least two more than I have, so good for you. Neil, this has been an awesome interview and very incredibly enjoyable. I'm so glad to get to know you in a different light,
fun,
man.
Thank you.
I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day to talk to me about parenting and your life.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the time, it's always good to connect.
Yeah, we'll talk soon, okay, brother?
All right, man. Have a good one.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you again for listening to The Girl Dad Show. To help our show grow, please let us know who we should interview next by filling out the form on our website or commenting below.